Welcome to Cultivate the Ordinary Podcast, curious conversations for the anxious, frustrated, and bored. I'm Travis.
And I'm Jesse. So often we're held captive by screens, schedules, and media that's mind-numbing and polarizing. This leaves us seeing dimly through a fog. We want to spark more imagination and a better awareness of God's presence in the everyday.
Join us on a fun journey of discovery and curiosity as we look at the ordinary through the lenses of joy, wonder, beauty, and hope. I'm really, really excited to have my dear friend, one of my favorite people, Bob Harding, Pastor Bob Harding from Cross Life Church in Spartanburg, joining us today on the podcast.
It's a joy and privilege to be here with you guys, and I'm looking forward to this. I don't know what it's going to turn out to be like, but I know it's going to be fun because I'm with you guys, so it'll be good.
That's awesome. Well, it's going to be kind of like going down a roller coaster. I told Bob we don't know where this thing's going to turn. Hopefully, we are buckled in, so I'm checking my straps. One of the two cool things I will say as I set this up as well is that I wrote the book Shiny Eyes a couple years ago, I believe, and I am someone who just sees the world through quotes. I love quotes. My good friend Bob does as well. That's part of how we bonded through the years. I think quotes for us are so illuminating. I'm going to have Bob share about his thoughts on that. But I was writing a book that I wanted to weave in lots of quotes to sort of paint a picture. And I thought, you know, of anyone to tap and write the foreword, it's got to be Bob. I mean, Bob is my fellow quote man, you know, on this journey of life. And so I was so stoked and honored that he said, yes, you know, yeah, I'll write that. And he did and filled his section of the foreword with quotes. I remember reading that and just going, oh my gosh, Bob, you captured this book. And it was such a beautiful thing to have someone compliment your own writing and then kind of, I guess, yeah, make it your writing to a degree to make in the front. So yeah, I don't know if anything you want to say about that.
Or no, well, again, it's like we're brothers from a different mother, I think. But it, yeah. Quotes have always spoken to me. I know, Jess, you're a wonderful artist. And so you'll take oils and crayons and markers and you'll paint beautiful pictures. Mm-hmm. I'm a horrible artist, but I love quotations because to me, that's written art where you can see the beauty in things. And for me, it just sparks something inside. I think it goes back to our creative order. I mean, God spoke things into existence. Right. John tells us that in the beginning was the Word. And so I think words and language are extremely important. And so for me, I love quotations because it just makes things come to life to me that they're far better at saying those things than I am, but it does spark things in me and it sparks beauty in me. So that's why I just gravitate to quotations and things like that. And your book, Shiny Eyes, was so helpful because there were so many of them that just made the concepts that you were trying to bring forth, it just brought them to life for me, which was great.
Yeah, no, that's well said. And I think I'm with you totally of like, it's like quotes kind of can illuminate a path. They can say something in a few words that an entire book, you know, tries to say. I mean, there's something just so gravitational that pulls, I guess, us both into that world of, you know, and yeah. So the episode today, what we're going to do is we're going to let some of our favorite quotes, we each pick three that we are going to each share and have you as a listener think on, and hopefully it sparks something in your mind and imagination. And then Bob and I are going to sort of have a conversation with Jesse as well around some of these thoughts, and we'll just kind of go through them, and they kind of hit at different things in life. So the last thing I would say, just personally as a connection point with Bob, is just, man, I have a shirt that says edgy as heck. Would anyone describe you as that?
Edgy as heck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But Bob has just brings so much lightness and joy and just your face, your eyes light up a room. I mean, I think of Shiny Eyes, I think of you. We have such a common love of bikes and brews and beards and
Your beard right now is a lot more manly than mine. I'll have to say that. Mine got trimmed up a little bit, so.
So yeah, that so there's we're just really good friends, and it's just it's really cool to be on this together. So.
Yeah, I second that. It has been a joy to watch the two of you form a friendship, and I guess it's been like 6 years now or something. Mm-hmm. That we've been in community together, and all the common things, and even our family structures are like so similar. So getting to watch you and Christy as parents, not watch you, but hear the stories that you have lived now that your kids are grown, and just get to learn from some of the wisdom and the things that you've shared, and not from a place of like ultimate wisdom or perfection, but just all the lessons, all the things where, you know, you guys were just really vulnerable and honest about the challenges and what you learned and stuff. So I've always appreciated that. But yeah, Bob, why don't you, welcome.
Yeah, well, thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you for coming and doing this with us. And why don't you say a little bit more about your family or anything you want to say about being a call to be a pastor?
Sure. Yeah, been married now. It will be. I got to think this through because I don't want my wife to get mad at me. It'll be 43 years in September. So she's been my soulmate, my girlfriend, my bride, and a real help to me. When I think of somebody demonstrating God's grace and cheering somebody on, I think of her. I mean, she's done that with me over these years. We have 5 awesome kids, 4 sons and a daughter. Again, as Jess said, they're all out of the home. They're all married. They have their own kids. And I will have to say that grandparenting is a whole lot more fun, I think, than parenting was, because when there's issues, you just turn them back over to their parents. You're not having to deal right. with it, which is awesome. But we've just been, as Jess said, it's not like we're ever going to write a book on parenting, but it is nice to have had experiences that we've had to be able to share them with other couples, and the mistakes that we made, the things that we learned, the things that we wished that we had done, and the things we wished that we hadn't done. In raising our kids. And so that that's just been a joy. As far as vocationally, God, it took a number of years to get me to where I am now. Was always involved in ministry. I was talking to somebody not that long ago that after we first got married, we pretty much dove right into doing stuff in churches. And so for most of our 43 years, we haven't known anything different than doing that. Some of it's been vocationally as a youth pastor, and now as pastor of our church. And just the calling to help shepherd people. Not that I am going to be the answer for everything, but to do life with them, to walk with them, to try to, as best with the power of the Holy Spirit, model Jesus for them. So they can say, oh, if that clown can do it, well, then I can too, kind of thing. And so that's what's gotten me to where I am today. So, and just again, thankful to be able to do this. It's fun. I'm sure the sales of your book now are going to skyrocket that they know that I wrote the foreword for that. And the other, you know, any other books that you write, if anything hinges on this, it's going to be a success. So thanks, guys.
Well, so, Bob, ever since we've gotten to know you, just your kindness for people and your enthusiasm for, like you said, shepherding them and loving them well has really stood out to me. And I was thinking of, like, I know you guys are doing your quotes, and I wanted to bring a quote. So I was like, oh.
Bring your quote.
Fred Rogers. Okay, so I think of Bob, this quote is what strikes me, right? Okay, so in times of stress, the best thing we can do for each other is to listen with our ears and our hearts and be assured that our questions are just as important as our answers.
That is amazing, and it's true. And so a little backstory. I think of Fred Rogers a lot, but it's not because I wear cardigan sweaters and I've got his deck shoes or anything like that, but I actually have a connection with him. My aunt for decades was a child psychology professor at the University of Pittsburgh, and so she worked with Fred Rogers on a consulting basis with his show quite often, actually, and knew him very well. When our oldest son was five, fell out of bed, and to make a long story short, we found out that he had some growth behind his left eye. And so he was going to be heading down to Children's Hospital in Philadelphia for evaluation and all this stuff. Well, my aunt caught wind of that and talked to Fred, and she had Fred call my son on the phone. Now, this is back in like the mid-80s, and so there were no cell phones. Phone long-distance phone calls cost money. And Fred calls my son, Ian, and for 30 minutes, they chatted on the phone. I wasn't there. I was at work that day. My wife was telling me that he was asking Ian, well, tell me about where you live. Tell me about the farms that are around you. Because we were surrounded by dairy farms that portion of our lives in that part of Pennsylvania. And for 30 minutes, Ian was talking about Farmer Phil. He was talking about the tractors. He was talking about this. And I liked Fred Rogers, but that day, my impression of him just skyrocketed. And what you just read, he did that. He did that with my five-year-old son. He took the time to listen to a five-year-old whom he had never met before, wanted to hear part of his story, and then he went to encourage him, to tell him, don't be afraid. You're going to go down, and the doctors are going to take care of you, and all those things that he actually communicated to my son. And so that was hugely, made a huge impression on me. And I would like to say that that helped me know how to listen to people, that everybody's stories are important, no matter what, you know, the world itself may think. Everybody has an important story. And so for somebody to listen to that five-year-old's important story that day, that meant, I know it meant a ton to my son, but that probably meant more to me and my wife than it did for our son. So.
Well, I love that, the two words, be assured, right? So his goal was to assure, you know, your questions, your wonderings, your confusion, whatever's going on for you, this is important too.
Yeah. So that was, that was awesome. I'm so thankful I did that. So.
Well, and, you know, if you're ever like in an icebreaker in a group or something with Bob and Christy, you know, a lot of times there's these games of like, you know, what's an obscure fact or something people wouldn't know. You guys are full of like, kind of like things like that, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's got like other enough, things like with TV shows. And,
oh, yeah. It's true. Yeah.
It's so funny. What, as we kick this off, and Bob already kind of alluded to this, we talked about the way in which quotes kind of illuminate or talk about reality in either a way that's thought-provoking or makes us pause. I always think in the book Shiny Eyes, and this is a funny one I reference in there. This is attributed maybe to Henry Ford, but he said at one point, history is just one damn thing after another. And that it's quotes like that that just it shows us a different way of even looking at something. Like, here's history, and it's like, man, it's the next thing, you know, it's just like, anyway, so I just, that's a funny thing in the book that it's a random quote, but I had to say that. I think it's funny. So let's get into this. Bob, tell us your first quote, and then let's talk.
Right, sure. So my first, let me introduce the author to my first quote, then I'll read the quote and just kind of describe a little bit what it means to me and what, So it's written by Brennan Manning, who has gone to be with the Lord several years ago. Brennan, throughout his life, struggled with alcoholism and really struggled with just the concept that God really loved him, loved him deeply. You know, I think that kind of haunted him throughout his life, especially the times he would stumble and fall and not feel like he was adding up to what God wanted him to be. And so let me go ahead and read his quote here. It says, "Being beloved is our identity, the core of our existence. It is not merely a lofty thought, an inspiring idea, or one name among many. It is the name by which God knows us and the way he relates to us." I never met Brennan, but my personality, from what I've read about him, he and I are very similar. and the way that we think about things, the way we process things in our heads, the way we handle disappointment, and trying to strive to have God like me more, which is impossible to begin with and frustrating because that will never happen because he loves us completely. Right. And so when I read this, I was talking to several men the other night, and I said, I think as followers of Jesus Christ, if we can get this, if we can understand that God loves us perfectly, we are his beloved kids. That's how he knows us, and that's how he relates to us. I think, not that problems go away, but I think so many things we struggle with would dim, I think, in their significance in our lives. When we fully understand, no, I'm his beloved kid,
right.
And he loves me. He loves me just like I am. As Fred Rogers would say, I like you as you are. God would say the same thing. So
doesn't Manning even say something like, God loves me where I am, not where I'm pretending to be?
Yes.
Is that Manning? That, I love that. I love what you said. I love that quote. It just feels like, and the sad reality is that of all people, that as Christians should really know intimately the love of God.
Yeah.
How many of those of us, and including pastors,
mm-hmm.
that you'll talk to and go, you know, I know my, almost, they might say it this way, like, I know my utility for God. I know my purpose for Jesus. I know, you know, this sort of functional like place you should have. And yet how many, I mean, we had a previous episode with on Soul Care on belovedness with Steve Smith, who has, you know, counseled, mentored, you know, pastors and leaders in the marketplace on that very thing. You know, just that we struggle to know that we are beloved, that God loves us.
Yeah. Well, I think, at least for me, I think we the way the world acts, they're looking for performance. They're looking for, and so if we don't quite add up, then people aren't going to be impressed with us. People aren't going to like us. People are going to gravitate away from us. Yeah. And so I think there's a lot of striving to try to create an identity that's out there that is unnecessary to create. Because if the almighty creator of everything loves me, not that those other things don't necessarily matter, but they pale in significance to that. And I think, at least for me, I have to constantly remind myself, no, I'm God's beloved kid. He loves me. He smiles when he, you know, looks on me. So.
Yeah. And I think one of the barriers, though, that a lot of people face that in the things I've encountered as I sit with people and stuff is, you know, experiences of detachment and, and not having enough references of feeling that belovedness by others here on earth. It makes it that much harder with your image of God to picture what that might feel like for God to love you that way. And so because of trauma and because people have had difficult experiences with relationships, that's a huge barrier.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you're right. For a lot of people, that's all they know, whether it's in the home or it's in school or whatever. That's the picture that they've seen. And so, you know, they just transpose that on God. And for them, it just becomes impossible to think that there's a being that actually loves me like that.
And I think that that's all the more reason why, you know, believers need to show that kind of radical love, that like, show people their belovedness so that they have a reference. Because maybe in their family or maybe their experiences have shown them otherwise, that they're not valuable.
And I also feel like a takeaway for that for us is maybe to more regularly together remind each other of that blessing and remind each other. You and I did that one time in a text of just recently, we were both light bulb went on of just feeling our belovedness. And I think, you know, you then texted me something about my belovedness in God's eyes. And I was just like, Bob, we got to tell each other that.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's part of Christian community is us doing that better, like coming together and just saying.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, we have to do that. Like I said, the world is not going to do that.
Right.
And so we should be compelled to do that for each other and not, you know, just give false piety and, you know, try to build somebody up, but really remind everybody, no, God loves you.
Yeah.
And I do too.
Yeah.
I think it's also important to share those things. So,
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go into my first quote. Actually, I've already shared a quote, so this would be the second quote. But
that's not fair. I'm gonna get shorted one.
No, I'm sure you'll throw one in somewhere.
There's a competition. That's right. For the best quote at the end of this.
Oh, is there? Okay. So, Graham Greene was an English novelist, very famous. Wrote some profound writing, fiction writing. He has a line that it just really sparks my imagination, where he says, "There's always one moment in childhood when the door opens and lets the future in." Hmm. And what I love about that is that it's sort of a backwards way of looking at, you know, we think of like, well, this decision changed my life, you know, or this moment, my life was forever changed. And I love how Greene is sort of taking that, reversing it in a really imaginative way, you know, and it's like, now let's look at the childhood and this event happened and the future came into the door. Mm. I just love that.
Yeah.
You know? So, I'm trying to think of, for me, and I don't know if you have any thoughts that come to your mind of it, was there a moment in your childhood that you can kind of relate to? It almost became a picture into your future, something that happened. Or so as I was reflecting on my childhood, in light of that quote, you know, it's, I think back to, you know, growing up as a farm kid in North Dakota and, you know, hard life, you know, it felt like, you know, I think there was some awesome stuff as well. And just, but, you know, it was really hard, you know, never had any money, old machinery, tough winters, just a tough landscape. Mm. You know, it was just a tough place to be. And you also feel like you're in this vast sea of, there's not a lot of cities around you and sort of kind of in the middle of nowhere. And I feel like it opens the sky up too, to possibility and imagination. I think I always had this sense of like, wanting to leave that, wanting to get out of there. You know, I had a love of mountain biking as a little boy, but there's, but it's, you know,
so there's speed bumps.
Exactly.
In North Dakota.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I made some trails in the woods at our farm, which is cool, but it was flat, you know, and just, yeah, it just felt like, those desires and those things that I longed for, it now that I look where I'm at now, it is like, have lived in multiple states, have seen a lot of places, have lived in big cities, have actually have mountain bike trails in Tennessee in the mountains. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah,
these types of things that I was imagining for. And then now I have a special place in my heart for North Dakota and my upbringing, my childhood, wanting to go back, some of that stuff. But yeah, it was just like, it was this sort of like door that opened and, you know, made me think about the future, look back at it. So.
Interesting. So, don't want to get like too mystical or anything. So would you look on that as like God just opening that door to just kind of give you a peek at what might be ahead for you? Or, when you say opening that door to the future, what does that look like?
Well, do you think that it like speaks to just the desire?
Mm-hmm. I think, like, yeah. I think it's more the desire.
Yeah.
And we definitely get down with a little mystical on this podcast, but it was definitely a desire, that, yeah, I think it was just like, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting quote, you know, it's sort of, you know, a very artistic way of thinking about the future, but, yeah, it's more of like, yeah, I think just that desire was there. And then, yeah. And maybe it was not just one moment, you know, but sort of
a space of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you've talked so much about like sparks of inspiration and things like that. And so seeing, you know, mountain biking videos and the stuff that you were into, it was like it sparked this dream. And then the desire was kind of like born.
Yeah. And actually that helps me think of this a little bit more. And it's funny because here my bike buddy here, and I'll bring up another bike thing, but Graham is talking about childhood, but I think this is still true of life to what he's saying here. But where, in St. Louis, you know, as an adult, I always wanted to have a bike shop, and I just had this desire to have a, you know, work at one or have one. And it was just this, man, this, deep rooted, you know, want, you know, for that. Mm-hmm. And then here, lo and behold, years later, we end up at a children's home in South Carolina. And we're working with kids in foster care in our home. And I'm looking at one moment, and my bike passion is out there, right? And so all these elementary boys are wrenching on bikes and we're making trails. And I was like, wow, I mean, this is the bike shop. Only it's way more than I imagined. It's not got walls and a business.
Yeah.
It's little boys that are discovering the adventure of biking and fixing and repairing, and they're going through horrible trauma, and this is a great escape. So it became like this beautiful picture of something even way more than I wanted. Mm-hmm. So we're pushing Graham's quote here probably beyond its limits, but
but you're exactly right. I mean, that window was opened and you got to see it, and then it was kind of cool how God worked that out, that you were able, this is not exactly what I thought, but this is actually better than what I thought it could be. So
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, like what we're doing here with quotes, because there's like this exercise that I've learned. It's an acronym, SIFT, and it's thinking of things or looking at a piece of art or whatever it is. And so in this case, a quote. And you're sensing, you're imagining or remembering, you know, and then feelings, like what feelings does that bring up for you, or desires, like what we're talking about. And then thoughts, like, are there, you know, certain future thoughts or conclusions or ideas or dreams? And just from a place of like relaxed curiosity, just taking a quote like this, somebody could do any time. And think of it from all those different angles, like how it hits you, not just as an idea, but memories and feelings. And, you know, does it spur you to want to take action in some way? Like,
I'm going to speak into this, and it'll actually lead into my next quotation we got up there. So when we sent these quotes to each other yesterday, people that are listening in, so it's not like we're just doing this blind. And so this was the one that you sent that I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to say with this. But as you were talking, was very helpful. Yeah. And so as a kid, I grew up, we were outside of the city of Philadelphia, but we were far enough out that there were a lot of farms were around us. And it was great for me because, unlike you, I wasn't working on those farms, but I could play on the farms and be in the barns, even though we weren't supposed to be. We would sneak in and, you know, be up jumping from the hayloft and things. And it, as you were talking, it just reminded me of, just as a kid, life was an adventure. You know, Mom back then would just say in the summertime, just be home by dinner. She wasn't even asking where we were going, what we were going to be doing, just be home for dinner. And I remember bike rides in the countryside, baseball games, either in our backyard or my friend's backyard. And the camaraderie that I formed then, I think just gave me a hunger and thirst for doing what we do together when we're together with our community group and doing community together. But also, in those rare instances where I still look back on this, life really is an adventure. It isn't something that's, you know, to be lived in, you know, a safe little box. And so this quotation from Bear Grylls, he's a British adventurist, as a follower of Jesus. And this is always, I have this up in the church office, as a matter of fact, and it's always a reminder to me of how I should approach life. And so he says, life should not be a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in an attractive and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in sideways, covered in scars, body thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and screaming, Yahoo, what a ride. And so I have to admit, I don't live this all the time, but when I do remember this, and yes, I know there's eternity, but I was thinking about this yesterday. My dad was really great at like restoring antique cars. It's because they were beat up, worn out, and everything. There is a day that's coming, if I can live like this, not, you know, just recklessly, but enjoy life and live it to its fullest. There is a restoration shop called Heaven where I am going to have that new body again. And it just reminds me, don't waste opportunities that are there. Take advantage of everything and live life as an adventure. Wear yourself out, having fun. Yes, we are eternal beings, but this portion of our eternity is only going to happen once. So let's don't waste those opportunities that we have to enjoy all of the good things that God gives us to enjoy. So that's what I, again, like I said, it's up in my office, and I look at it about once or twice a week just to remind myself, hey, I go on a nice bike ride and did this a couple weeks ago. And so I'm looking at my app that I have, and I hit a top speed of 45 miles an hour coming down a mountain in North Carolina. I'm like, that was awesome. Thanks, God. I'm alive to say thank you. But those kinds of things, I don't want that just to become old hat or something to get you. It should be something that just invigorates and challenges and encourages. So
it's very cool. And for you, knowing you, I mean, you would probably say, even if you did get hurt, that was worth the risk to just... You're living. You're living life to the fullest.
Well, it's just... funny. I mean, I've been hit by a car before on my bike. I've got scars all over me from my bike, but I'm alive to tell the story. So they're funny and cool stories to tell.
I think you have that quote in the foreword of the book, Sean Yaz.
Yeah, I do.
So I remember, it definitely, I love it. I think that it reminds me of my dad who would often say, you know, his mantra is fight, give it all you got.
Yeah.
Give it all you got.
Play well.
Yes.
Well, and I think like, you know, you'll be humble and say, well, no, I don't have this down and this and that. But I think like, you live that in a way that I think has been very visible to those around you because, and I think just to take that as a true compliment to like what God's done in you and just what you've done and how you're wired. But, you know, my brother Dan, who's a pastor, has kind of been mentored some at times by Bob, you know, just kind of encouraging him in ways. And I think one of the things Dan would say about you just looking at your life is just that when he's around you and he sees, you know, he's seen the pastor world, been there and been in big churches and seen the burnout and seen the, like, you know, just despair and stuff like that, which is common to human condition. We all have that. But he said, being around you, though, has been, there's just something about you as a pastor and the lightness you bring and just the joy that you carry. And for that alone is very encouraging to him.
Well, thanks. I should have worn a different t-shirt. I've got one that says, life is short, play hard, instead of pray hard. Not that you shouldn't pray hard, but play hard. So I should have wore that t-shirt today.
I think, you know, that may not be an actual scripture, but I'm pretty sure that's still biblical.
I'm right there with you.
God is a God of joy and levity. Mm-hmm. And
and that's something that you and Bob totally share in common. Mm-hmm. Like your personalities for levity and your zest and zeal for life is just, that's why you guys connect so well.
I agree. I mean, that's, like I said, it's, it wasn't long after I met you that there were just all these connections that just like, wow.
Yeah.
For one thing, God, thank you. Because I need Travis and Jesse and others in my life that are just like you. You are a challenge to me, all the things that you do. You know, like we're supposed to spur one another on to love and good deeds. Will you guys do that? And particularly you, Travis, more so in my life. And so I just want to thank you for that personally because it's, you're one of those guys like, all right, it's worth keep going. So I'm going to keep going. So thanks.
Well, thanks for saying that. And it life, there's so much about being a brotherhood because I feel the exact same thing back.
Yeah.
So, from you. So we're going to round our... second, third turn of the track here as we come into the...
So this is NASCAR now. I like Formula One better than NASCAR because it's got some right-hand turns instead of all left-hand turns, but...
I still need to get to a NASCAR race. I never have yet.
They're fun. I've been to lower-level ones, but I've heard the bigger ones are really a blast. Nice. So we'll do that for a guy's time sometime.
I like that idea. Okay. So we're going to go into my quote here, number two. Keep in mind we have three, so we're getting there. Any of those that are left listening to the podcast at this point.
It's going to be my wife and maybe one or two of my kids.
There's some relatives hanging on for Bob. I think I've lost all my followers. But this comes from an Italian priest, Luigi Giussani, and he's talking about power. And this is one of the most profound quotes I will say I've ever, I think, heard, read, reflected on. I did put this in Shiny Eyes. And I think it's very, very critical in our time. And he's talking about power. He says, power puts everyone to sleep as much as possible. Its great system, the great method, is that of putting to sleep, anesthetizing, or better yet, atrophying. Atrophying what? Atrophying the heart of the human person, our needs and desires, and imposing an image of desire and need that is different from the boundless urge we have in our heart. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
I'm really excited to hear any of your commentary on this, but for me, I just take this, you know, and this has been, back since the dawn of time, back since the Garden of Eden, the temptation to flirt with power, you know, even the devil in the garden, you know, the craftiness of persuading Eve, you know, if you eat of this, you know, so it's the human condition is to want power. And, you know, so then fast forward to now and we think politically, you know, if my party could just get into office, if, you know, so-and-so can get elected or, you know, whatever context that power, we all want that in a way. There's a temptation in our heart. What I love that Luigi is doing here is he's looking much deeper at power and that idea that, wow, I mean, there's an element of it putting us to sleep, an element that it's an imposing an image of desire that is different from, and I take this as the boundless urge God created in our heart for him, for him alone.
Yeah.
And so that idea that choosing lesser things to put our trust in, I think is where he's getting at with power, is both atrophying, shrinking our heart and putting us to sleep.
Yeah.
Wow. What do you think on that?
Well, I spent a lot of my adult life in the corporate world. And so the couple times I read this, I immediately thought of that and power structures that companies will have. And, you know, it was funny, the last corporation that I worked for, you know, we have interns come in, whether they're college students, summer interns or whatever, and they would come in with all these fresh and great ideas that they had because they were, you know, they're fresh out of the classroom, they want to do this. And it was interesting to watch how that just kind of got sucked out of them. Said, well, we don't do that like that here. No, this is how we do this. This is how we do this. And you're kind of looking at that power that's there. So I'm looking at it a little bit differently as an outside power that's coming in that does stifle. It does take those creative things that God's given to us to be able to flourish, and how power can just suck that right out of us. And you know, again, I got to see that, and it to me, it was at first sad, but then it kind of almost got comical because it was over and over and over, and you would sit down, you would talk to them. Well, I know, you know, you're thinking this, 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 and this, but this is how they do things here. This is how it's going to happen. And if you're thinking that, I would advise you don't do that because it's not going to go anywhere. You're just going to get frustrated. And when I was thinking about this, I thought about Jesus. Here's the guy, you know, the Holy Son of God, took off and stripped down and washed his disciples' feet. And then not that much further down the road, he turns the family business over to them. He turns the keys, the car over to them and said, look, I've finished my ministry now. It's your turn now. And just watching how he handled the power of Almighty God and shared that with human beings. And that, I was thinking of that very last thing. That is that boundless urge in us because we were created in his image to partner with him. And Jesus says, here you go. Wow. You guys, human beings, you now have the family business is now in your hands. I'm going to go be with the Father. So it's yours. So that's what I was thinking about when I was looking at that and thought immediately of him turning over, in essence, that power, because I thought it would have been perfect when he rose from the dead. He could have set up his earthly kingdom then. It would have been great, because no, I'm not doing it this way. Yep. You guys are going to partner with me and help, which I thought was just, that was, so when I looked at that, that one really encouraged me as I was reading that, and I'm not sure whether Luigi meant it that way or not, but that's the beauty of words. That's how I took that quotation. So
absolutely. Yeah, no, that, I love that. Spark new things in me, what you said.
Yeah, as he was talking, I just thought of a recent conversation you and I had, and just about what it really looks like to empower others and how vulnerable you have to be to allow power to leave. What I mean, if you're in a place of power, to give it away.
Sure.
And what that looks like to share it, to let people relax and be creative and use their gifts and let them spring out of those desires of the heart. Right. You know, it's such a gift, those who that do that.
Yeah. Well, I've seen you guys do that with your kids, especially your older two sons. Like, going out, get a job. You want to get a job? Go for it. Do that. You're doing track. You're doing all those things that you're just kind of slowly but surely, you're teaching them what it's like to turn over the keys. They're now becoming responsible adults, and it's fun to actually watch them flourish right. in this, where you can see them maturing and just, yeah, like I said, flourishing, mm-hmm. and you guys kind of taking the hands off slowly but surely a little bit and letting them be who God created them to be. And it's just fun from the outside watching that and watching them. And so, yeah, you guys do a good job of that with your kids. So keep it up.
Appreciate it. It's it's a battle, as all parents know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know well, too. Well, let's go to your final.
All right,
This is final, Bob.
And so I wouldn't say it's necessarily the best for last, but this is one that I came across with just a couple weeks ago, actually, that really hit me. It's a quotation from Gene Edwards. He was pastor, really got involved in the house church movement back several years ago. He has since passed away. But this one really sparked something in me because, anyhow, I'll go ahead and read it and then share my comments. It says this: what kind of Christian can best endure suffering? That Christian doesn't exist. I could handle your problems easily. You could handle mine with a yawn. But it didn't happen that way. I got the ones I couldn't handle, and so did you. And for so often in my life, I have heard so many well-meaning people say, well, God's not going to give you anything that you can't handle. And as I was reflecting on this, I'm like, well, then why do I need God? Because if he's not going to give me anything that I can't handle, I can handle it by myself. So I'm okay with that. And what I love about this is God brings things into our lives that we can't handle apart from him, that we have to go to him, that we have to fall on our face before him and say, God, I don't know what to do now. God, you've got to help me because I can't figure my way out of this one. And so it's just for me, it's a reminder that I've got to be dependent on God for everything. You know, heaven forbid that I think that I've gotten mature enough now that I can handle it on my own. You know, I still need to rely on God for everything. And yes, he does give me things I can't handle so that I can come to him and rely on him, even though I feel like I'm stumbling through the dark and tripping over things on my way. I know he's there with me, helping me as I'm tripping over those things in that. Knowing for me personally that he's there. And so, yes, I guess maybe in a twisted sense, I can handle it, but it's only because he's handling it for me. So,
man, when I saw this quote that you sent, I hadn't read it before, and it really made me think, and your response does as well. What I also love about this exercise of us sharing together these quotes is just how you did with the last quote, previous quote. What sparked in you something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I think there's a beautiful way these kind of...
Well, it's like how people look at you know, pieces of art.
Sure.
Somebody will see something and somebody sees something else. And that's the beauty of these things.
And so, wholeheartedly agree with everything you said and well said. The angle that it hit me was a little bit of like, this idea that, cause it's so relatable, this idea that we see someone else and, you know, we're kind of like, wow, this seems to be such a struggle for them. I think I could handle that. Or, you know, or sometimes we think that, you know, and we're often comparing. But then there's a lot of times I know for sure we're going, man, I mean, I wish someone else, I mean, I just can't do this. This idea that the problems that we are facing that our neighbors or friends could handle, but we couldn't, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Also has this beautiful sense to me that it's the need for one another.
Mm.
The need in God's providential crafting is design of what he allows, why he allows someone, say, in our small community group to go through this one. You know, we have a girl in our group that's really struggling with her eyesight, among other things. Mm-hmm. And it's just so coming together and trying to give her encouragement, knowing we're not going through that and wondering how would I be doing with that? Mm-hmm. But there's this beautiful way, I think, in which because we're all handling different things in different ways that we can come together and lean into needing one another.
Yeah. That's great. So that's part of... Yeah, you're exactly right. I love your take on that because it is. You know, God created us as communal beings. And so we do need each other. And so being able to encourage people in this when they're at the point where they feel like they can't handle it. Yeah. And so we're constantly reminding them of the truths of God's word. And even if it just kind of bounces in one ear and out the other for them, because it's really hard for them to process that, and they may not feel it at that moment. Mm-hmm. Just to know that we're there with them, I think, is just huge.
Well, and you just saying that, I just got chills, because then it made me think, maybe that is largely the way it is, God helping us.
Yes.
Through those people that we're in community with.
Uh-huh.
And we'll never know until the side of eternity where we can maybe look back. I don't know if we get a video or looking back at our life and, hey, can we rewind that part? But where we will see we were brushed by the fingerprints of God every single day. And what it looked like more often than not was the complete mundane. We were at a small group or whatever setting it was. I was going through something tremendously hard. You gave me encouragement, prayed with me, and that was God through you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is profound. I mean,
that
I
is.
I think what you both are getting at is like the ranking and the oh, well, my suffering's, you know, worse than yours, or mine's not as bad as that person, so I'm not going to speak up. I'm not going to tell anybody how hard this is for me. It just speaks to like, okay, we have to stop that. We have to stop comparing our suffering to others. And it's all part of the same muck, that when we share that and we bear with one another in these burdens and we speak up, you get to then, going back to the previous quote, you know, share in the belovedness. Like, you get to receive care and attunement and just the things that come from other believers that really are from God.
Yeah. Like, well, I know you guys have experienced this, and I've experienced this throughout my life, when it could be just a hellacious day, and all of a sudden, God just breaks through, and it might be a phone call. It might be a bird chirping out the window. It might be something, but for me, the vast majority of the time, it's somebody. Either sending a text that day that we started this belovedness thing, and I told you, you don't know how much I needed this that day. I said, God, thank you. I needed that today. And so that was God working through you to meet a need that I had that only you could meet that day. I taught middle school kids for years in a previous church. And one of the things I always try to beat into their heads was, you'll never know those little words that you say, the things that you do. You do not know what kind of eternal impact that those will have until one day you're there in heaven. So don't waste opportunities, and don't look at anything that's like too small for you to do, because you don't know what that other person is going through at that moment, and you could be God's voice that, you know, they need to hear in your life. So that's, I appreciate you looking at it that way. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, that was a great quote. So we are going to close with this final quote.
We got to be done. This is fun.
Part one. Yeah. We'll see. No, I'd love to come back.
We'll be back again.
Oh, boy.
Lurking in the shadows with more quotes.
As long as there's more than five people who listen to this, then you guys can invite me back.
Oh, man. We'll see after this episode. How many are left? But this is from Peter Kraft, who is one of my favorite writers. He's a lecturer at Boston College, philosopher and theologian. He says this about our culture. Our culture has filled our heads but emptied our hearts, stuffed our wallets but starved our wonder. Mm-hmm. It has fed our thirst for facts but not for meaning or mystery. It produces nice people, not heroes.
Mm. Yeah, you almost don't even need to comment on that.
You're right.
One is
you're,
just
there's
awesome.
Sometimes that you just...
Sometimes you don't need commentary.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those mic drop moments there.
Are you going to put these in the show notes, every single quote, so people can read
them?
Yeah,
we will. Yeah, we will do that. But since you came up with the idea, that could be some work that you can...
Wow.
Oh, no.
Be careful what you suggest,
right?
It just
got very icy in here.
Yeah.
So she's leaving to get one of our kids. We're just real life.
I'm hoping it's not something that we had said that's caused her to leave.
It is interesting timing, though, how she knows leaving after I said, okay. So anyway, going back to this, this is one where we'll just get in the way here. But I do think, I think that we all can probably relate to this idea that so much of our world and our lives are occupied with knowledge acquisition. And it's just, you know, we have at our disposal to know information, and it's just, it's unbelievable. And yet the weight of that, and we've lost a sense of, you can almost, what would you say? In the journey to know and know more, we lose that sense of wonder too, to some degree. I think we can feel like we, everything seems like it can just be something researched to be known. And there's some things that are just beautiful mysteries. Kraft has another line of something like, you know, the scientist sees more clearly, but the poet sees further. You know, this, that's kind of getting that sense of wonder. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, let me say this about it. Two things just, you know, jumped into my head as you're reading that. I look back on, when, you know, your wife was not working at the time, so we had one income family. And so vacations were, we could split. One year we would go backpacking for a week, and the next year we would go to the beach, and so that's how we did that. And I always remember those backpacking trips when you're completely disconnected from everything. You're in a place where, I mean, when we first started, cell phones were just becoming a thing. But when you're just completely disconnected from all of that stuff, you're trying to get to your campsite that next night. But just the joy and the beauty and the wonder and the awe that is all around you. That we just skip over all the time. And to be able to spend a week and, you know, sitting, you know, on the edge of a mountain and watching the sunset. Or I remember one year, this was like the coolest thing I ever saw. We were, I don't know what elevation we're at. It's not like we're at 10,000 feet or anything. But I remember looking at a thunderstorm that was in the valley below us. And it was just so awesome to sit there with my daughter for like 30 minutes and just watch it just kind of move across that valley. Was just, it's like, God, this is wonderful. This is awesome. I can't believe that. But I think that as followers of Jesus, and I've got to be careful with what I say here because doctrine is extremely important. But I think that for oftentimes we can get to the point where we want to cram our heads with more facts about God, about Jesus, about the Bible. And those things are important. Theology is important. However, Jesus didn't come to teach us things about him. He came to give us himself. And so it's always been about that relationship with him. That's why he came. He's going back to restoring the original creative order where God was walking with man. And so Jesus now comes in the flesh and paying the price so that we could have that again. And one day we will be walking with him in another garden again. And so I think we can... We can comfort ourselves because we know a lot about the Bible, but we don't know the person that's behind it all. And it's sad, but I think some people do that because they're kind of afraid. Be still and know that I'm God. We don't know how to be still.
Exactly.
And what do we do with that? So I'm kind of rambling.
No, it's really good.
But it is that relational thing that is the key to it all for me.
I think what you're saying is, of course, be in the Word, and no one's, you know, don't take away the, if it's a quiet time, whatever it is that you have a rhythm of, you know, learning and meeting God's presence in Scripture. But there's another part that I think we miss of the relational side of just being with Him, being in stillness, being in nature, being in quiet places. And you know, I've heard it described as some of the most profound prayers are ones of silence, where you're letting God actually speak to you, to me. And we're not just filled with requests for Him to change the next thing, but just to be with Him. I think that's a lifelong journey of discovery. It also triggered in me, wasn't even planning this, but back to Peter Kraft, who wrote a profound book on suffering. And I remember there's, as he kind of gets to the end of this book, and you kind of made this point about it's ultimately at the end of the day, it's a relationship with Jesus and being with him more than his knowing about him. And Kraft says about suffering that if all we want is the answer to suffering, which we do, and mm-hmm. that's not wrong.
Yeah.
That it would, it kind of says it will inevitably lead us to a hall of mirrors where it's just the answers just sort of,
oh, wow.
Right. And that the actual answer is the answer, capital answer, Jesus himself.
Wow.
Not the answer about yeah. why. Mm-hmm. It's I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here with you.
Yeah.
Now, someday, maybe that'll make more sense when we have the full picture of...
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah. But ultimately, I mean, the answer to the suffering is the yeah. answer himself.
Jesus. Well, I mean, you think about even Psalm 23. It's not in a classroom setting. He's talking about a shepherd. He's talking about being in the field. He's talking about going through the valley of death. And it isn't the facts that he's trying to get across. It's the fact that the shepherd is there.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's... Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So... Well, that's a wrap on
wow.
our...
This was fun. If nobody else listens to this, I've had a blast. And again, this is what I love about you. We're so much alike that yeah. we could probably sit here for another 5 hours because it was really hard for me to try to trim down. I just took like the most recent things, like the one I yeah. saw it was hanging up in my office and the two recent things that I just come across again because there's a whole boatload of stuff. I didn't know what to pick. So
I was joking with Jesse I said, you know, Bob sent me, I think, cause we talked about like, let's do two or three. So we both shared three, but I think you sent me like six
yeah.
and I said, I would do the same and great willpower for a quote addict to, you know,
yes.
three, but I'm going to still include six, but it wasn't yeah. 20. It's
yeah, like, it could have very easily been 20. And so what I did, I highlighted the ones I'm like, oh, I'm going to definitely do these.
Right.
Yeah. So thanks for having me. This was great.
Yeah.
If nothing else, just hanging out with you and Jess was well worth the time. So love you guys to death. So this was awesome.
Really, really fun to have you on and it won't be the last. So
cool.
All right. Thanks for listening to the podcast today. I hope you found something helpful, hopeful, or thought-provoking. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to any resources mentioned in the podcast. And we also have links in the notes for our own resources to check out. We would really love to hear from you. And we're also really grateful for your support by sharing the podcast episodes with your friends and family and leaving a rating and review. May we all regain and maintain our wonder, hope, and inspiration as we look at our ordinary through new and fresh eyes.